Thank you. Does everyone have a handout? If you need a handout, Chris has a few more. Some people that are just coming in probably don't have one. Yeah, here's a few more. That's good. Today we're going to tour Herod's temple. The handout that you have gives you sort of a diagram of the layout, and we'll explain all of that as we go along. As you know, there were several temples built on the site in Jerusalem where Solomon's temple was built. The Babylonians destroyed Solomon's temple, and then the returning refugees built a new temple on the site, not as glorious as the one that Solomon had built. And it's thought that that one was also destroyed and rebuilt, perhaps by the Jews about 150 years before Christ. And that temple was torn down in the time before Christ came, by Herod and the Jews to rebuild the temple that we'll talk about today. Now, what we know about Solomon's temple is pretty much all we know is in Scripture. And all we know about the temple that was rebuilt afterwards would be the material that Ezekiel gave us, because it's thought by most scholars that the returning Jews used his plan. We don't know much about the intertestament period and the temples that were there on the site at that time, but we know quite a bit about Herod's temple, because now we're getting down to a time when there was quite a bit of material written about it. Not so much in the Bible. We'll look at some references to it in the Gospels, but also other writers in that time left some material. Josephus wrote a little bit about it, and other, what we call the church fathers, wrote some things about Herod's temple, which was destroyed in AD 70 by the Romans. So it was begun in BC 19 or so, and so it lasted less than 100 years. But it was a very extensive structure, and so because we know a little bit about it, a number of models have been built, and we're going to look at one of the models today. If we could tour it, a good model will give us some ideas of what it would look like. Now, in my business in research in biology, one of our major concepts was, if you think you understand something you're watching, especially something you're looking at in the microscope, if you think you really understand it, try to build a model of it. And that's what my students and I tried to do with things like chromosomes and centrioles and mitochondria and the various parts of cells. And so, or even a virus or a bacterium, make a model. Because in making the model, you ask yourself questions that you didn't think to ask before. Where do I put this structure or that structure? You think you know where it goes, but when you actually are building something like it, then you have to know exactly where to glue it in. And so it becomes a specific question that you can answer by building a model. And you realize you have to just guess about some things. And so there are some guesses in the model that we'll look at. So let's start here with the area where it is today. If you were flying into Jerusalem passing over what's called the Temple Mount, if that's not forbidden airspace, I don't really know whether it is or not. This would be what you would see looking down. A rectangle that runs from about here, no, it's about here, excuse me, across to there, back up to there, and back across that direction. Now, the temple would have sat on the rock that we talked about before, where the Dome of the Rock now sits, facing this direction. So down is east, and this is north, and that's what's called the West Wall. And that wall, which was built by Herod, still is there. And what else is it called by the Jews? The Wailing Wall. They go there to lament the passage of their history and some of the structures that were built there. And so, and then this over here would be the South Wall. The distance from this wall to that wall is just about a driver and a four iron, a par four, about 400 yards, okay, for you men who play golf. It's about 400 yards from here to there, and about 150 yards across, which would make a pretty good three, par three, wouldn't it? So that'll give you some idea about the distances that we're talking about. And that's a pretty good acreage here. I don't remember how many acres that is, but something in my mind sticks as 15 acres, but I'm not sure if that's right or not. Now, when he began to build, we need to talk a little bit about Herod the Great. He became king shortly after the Romans took the provinces here, and he reigned for quite a while, from, I can't remember when he was inaugurated as king, but I know that he died in about 4 BC. So he was king, it seems to me, for 25 years or something like that. And in that period of time, he was a great builder. The Romans had perfected the technology for hardening concrete underwater so that they could build concrete harbors, for example. He built the Michaelis fortress where they imprisoned John the Baptist. He built a temple for the Samaritans. He built many structures, colosseums and large buildings for the population all over what we call Palestine. And along about 20 BC, he was having trouble with the Jewish population. They didn't like him. He didn't like them. And so there was this problem of getting along. And he decided as a policy that he would do something for them to kind of pacify the Jews. The temple that was there on the site apparently was old and dilapidated, so he proposed that we tear it down and rebuild a magnificent temple on the site. Now, he didn't do that out of his love of God. He did that out of political expediency. But he had plenty of resources, and there were some restrictions to such a project because it was a holy site, and so how were they going to get work qualified to do any of the work? So he took several hundred of the priests and trained them as stonemasons and carpenters and such. And so these men who were priests could roam the site and work on it. And so they took down the old temple and over a period of several years rebuilt the temple structure itself, which you'll see is this large white building in the handout that I gave you. And so they did that rather hurriedly, rebuilt the main structure, much on the same pattern, the same floor plan as Solomon's temple. So it consisted of a holy place and a most holy place, although they didn't have anything to put in the most holy place. They didn't have the Ark of the Covenant anymore. They may have put some cherubim or something in there and an altar of incense. But they did finally have a place where the priest could go once a year and make sacrifice for the sins of the people on the Day of Atonement. And then they spent a long time building up the courts and the buildings around the temple. And it was still under construction throughout Jesus' life. And it wasn't completed until about, I think it was 46 A.D., something like that. They finally considered it finished. No, it was 46 years in building. That's the number that stuck in my head. So you have to subtract 20 from that, don't you? So it would be 26. Well, that would have been completed about toward the end of Jesus' lifetime then, wouldn't it? But I get the distinct feeling that it wasn't completed while Jesus was there, but they were still working on it. So. All right, so what he did was to build a wall around the enclosure here. The hill was a hill with the peak of the Mount Moriah where the rock, Araunah's threshing floor, had been. And so it fell away from there on all sides. Well, that didn't make a good construction site, so he put a retaining wall around the outside out of huge stones and down to bedrock, and those walls still exist, in part at least, particularly the western wall. And it is an amazing structure 2,000 years later. Then he leveled everything in the enclosed space, and so he filled in to make a flat platform on which to build. And then he spent a lot of time starting in the middle with the temple and then working outward through the rest of the structure. And we'll look at that in detail. All right, so here's an artist drawing of what that might have looked like while it was under construction. And there's a main part of the structure in here, but all of this is called the temple courts. And there are structures around the outside, colonnades particularly, and this is called a stoa over here, the royal stoa. Anybody ever hear that word before? S-T-O-A. I had never encountered it before, but it means a fancy colonnade with multiple columns. So, there was a man in England, Alec Garrard. He started 30 years ago with a model project to build what he thought would be an improved model. He wasn't satisfied with what he had seen in the way of models of Herod's temple, and so he decided he needed something to do with his life. He was a farmer, but he wanted a hobby, and so he said, well, what I'll do is set out to spend the rest of my life building this model of Herod's temple. And I'd never heard of it, but Chris Fries and Bob Burright saw it on the internet and both alerted me to its existence. And it's an amazing structure that he's put together over the years. And that's what's shown on the front of your handout. And we'll look at that in detail because he's considered now to be one of the world's foremost experts on Herod's temple. He spent 3 or 4 years researching the thing before he began, and he spent 30 years in building and rebuilding and modifying and making this structure. So, let's take a look at it. This is a photo, and all of these photos were made by Jeff Robinson, who apparently was his appointed photographer for this task. And you'll see there are people in the courtyards. And it consists of several concentric barriers here, and we'll talk about each of these areas and see what they look like up close. Now, there is our hero. He's now 78 years old, I think is what the story is. It's on the back of your, on the back of the picture. You'll see the story of Alec Girard. And he spent his lifetime, as his wife says, she wished he had picked a different hobby, but he's really delved into this in great detail, and you see him sitting there in the middle of his model. So that gives you some scale. It's 12 by 20 feet on the outside perimeter, as I understand it. So we'll look at all of the various parts of this in detail. Here it is labeled the way it is in your picture. And so we get kind of an overview. And there are some names in here that you'll recognize, like the beautiful gate, the court of the women. I had never heard of the Nicanor Gate, and I don't know the history of that, but it's a main structure in the middle that separates the court of the women from the court of the priests. And here's the temple. We won't go into the temple itself. We'll look at all of the outside structure. The temple inside was very similar to Solomon's temple, apparently. And so over here in one corner is a fortress, Antonia Fortress. We'll talk about that in a minute. And here's the western wall, the court of the Gentiles, and the Israel court, and the court of women. So we'll look at all of those parts up close. And we'll see the population that lives here. These are some of the examples of people that Girard made. Each one is handmade, and you get a feel for the fact that he tried to make their clothing fit the period. This individual with the ragged clothes may be, I don't know if it looks a bit ragged, but it may be difficult to work at this scale because each of these structures, you see how big it is. They're about a half inch tall. You try to make these individual people at a half inch and all individually made by him. There's 4,000 of them. Can you imagine? He spends a couple hours on each one, apparently, and they're hand-painted. Who do you suppose this particular individual would be? You recognize anything about him? That it's a priest, isn't it? Because here are 12 stones on his breastplate. So that was an attempt to make something like the high priest. He has, as you see on the back, he's got several different versions of Jesus in different situations depicted around the model. And he gives his viewers, his visitors, binoculars so they can see the details from outside the structure itself. So here's the temple at an angle. You can get a feel for it. It still has things that we recognize, the storage rooms built around the outside of it and the front porch. It's taller than Solomon's temple by, it's about 5 stories tall. And it's surrounded by barriers to keep anyone but the priest from going in here. And we'll look in the front door of it later on. Now, there are a lot of other buildings around the outside of it. I've just labeled these the surrounding cloisters. Some of them don't have a roof on them, but I think that's so that the visitors can see down in them as opposed to these back here. There are lots of people coming and going, as you see here. Many people among the Jews, anybody could go into the court of the women, for example. All right. The Antonia Fortress back here in the background. Because one of the main purposes of Herod in building this structure was to keep the Jews pacified. But occasionally, if there's going to be a riot, where do you suppose the riot's going to start? It's going to start where they're congregating, and they congregate at the temple. He knew that. And so he built a fortress and had soldiers on the scene at all times. So there were barracks in this Antonia fortress. And who do you suppose he named Antonia after? That was named in honor of Mark Antony. You ever hear of him? And so Julius Caesar was one of the first of the Caesars, and his compadres were also friends of Herod. And so there you'll find names that are familiar to you in a number of situations if you read that history. So here you see the people streaming in to the temple. And if we go back into that corner where the fortress is, we'll go there first, I think. The west wall, you can see the columns in the colonnade. Now, the colonnades consisted of a row of columns on one side and a solid wall on the other side. And between them, they could support a roof. And so here's the colonnade at the corner where the west wall here meets the north wall, and Antonia's fortress is right there. And you see, maybe this is a money changer, I don't really know. This looks like someone roasting some of the meat. And the priest ate the meat, some of the meat. I don't know if that's what this represents or not. And over here you see a man on a horse. Let's go see what that's all about. And there's a century of troops. What does that mean? How many? 100. And they're in array, 10 by 10. But you notice they don't seem to be as tall as maybe this is a centurion. I don't know if it is or not. They seem to be kneeling in this formation. And you see their spears. And he's blowing a trumpet. And there's another horse at the back. So here's 100 troops, and there were probably many more in the barracks back here. This group was just out parading around, I suppose. Show of force. Now, there are these lower walls throughout the temple area. They're 6 feet tall, most of them. I guess they all are. And there are gates at periodic intervals along the way. The temple is over here, so we're looking at something on the south side of the temple. There's a gate here and a gate here and a gate here. This is called the Soreg. And it's a fence beyond which no one but the Jews could go. Gentiles were excluded from passing through these gates. And at each gate there was, in three languages, there was a posted warning that if a Gentile passes this point, he'll be killed. This is a holy place. They were not allowed. And in fact, you'll see that the structure of the temple itself is one of exclusion. Gentiles could come into this outer court over here. And you see they can come up from underneath. We'll see why in a minute. This is sort of like an entrance to a subway, isn't it? But they didn't have a subway in those days. There are passageways that lead out to the wall over here and gates at the bottom of the wall. So they come up underneath, come out here, and pass through the gate if you're an Israelite. And then you go into the court of Israel here. So this is one of the exclusive features. But there are regions to which the women can go no further. There are regions that the Israelite men can go where women can't go, and there are regions where the priests can go where no one else can go. So, here we have the Soreg, and it goes all the way around the temple on all sides. There are 13 entrances into the temple area. This is the gate, beautiful, at the eastern end of the construction here, and we'll see on your You see that on your picture that you have here down at bottom center. And that particular gate, you will recall, one day Peter and John were going up to the temple at the time of prayer at 3 p.m. This is NIV that we're reading. Now a man crippled from birth was being carried to the temple gate called Beautiful. And so he was brought to that spot where he was put every day to beg from those going into the temple courts. And of course this would be a major entrance way. And so that's why they left him there. He would see the biggest crowd. When he saw Peter and John about to enter, he asked them for money. You remember what happened? In Acts 3, verses 1 to 3, this is just the start of the story where Peter and John said they don't have any money to give him, but what would they give him? Arise and walk, yeah. And they healed him. He was crippled for how long? For his lifetime, crippled from birth. So he had to learn to walk, didn't he? In healing him of his crippledness, all of the neurons in his brain had to be rearranged so he'd know how to walk. Not only did he walk, but he was jumping around, wasn't he? And giving glory to God. So that's where that happened. Here's a market for sacrificial animals, and you know that was there. Here, over here we have some sheep. I don't think there are any pigs, are there? No. No pigs. But there may be cages here with doves, as you see in there, and bigger animals as well. Here they seem to be looking at a calf or something larger. And there were other things that were sold here as well. And you know about Jesus' concept about the market. He wasn't really pleased that there should even be a market, was he? Not within the temple. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found men selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove them all from the temple area, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get these out of here. How dare you turn my father's house into a market?" What was Jesus' attitude toward Herod's temple? Did he honor it? He did, didn't he? And he did a lot of his teaching at the temple. And we'll see where in a moment. Question. No, it's the court of Israel all the way around. Inside that Soreg barrier.
Okay, and so you think that
this was out in the corner near the colonnades. I don't know where particularly in this case. It seems to be up against a wall somewhere. I'm not sure where it was. I looked all through the model to try to find that orange, that red roof structure. That I didn't spot it in the overview, but maybe somebody did. Okay. Well, we think it's out in the court of the Gentiles. I do, but I don't have any guarantee of that. And it seems to be against a wall over here somewhere, and I don't know where that is. And it could be that it's outside the wall. I don't know where Gerard put it in his model, because I don't see it in any of the parts that we see here. Although we'll see in a minute another structure in there that shows up in the Gospels. Now here's Solomon's colonnade over here. It runs all the way down the wall on the east side. And you see it's columns on one side and a wall on the back side. And it's at a corner here where we have the north wall meets it. And there's steps, you'll notice, through the columns here and one column which is a little bit bent. Steps go up to the top, and you could get on the top of this and walk around up there as well. So here you see the people milling around in the corner, and occasionally you'll see tables, and but the people met here near these colonnades or near these porches. It's called Solomon's Porch in the King James. The apostles performed many of their, Acts 5, verses 12 to 14. The apostles performed many of their miraculous signs and wonders among the people. And all believers used to meet together in Solomon's colonnade. So you see that that porch which ran all along the east side of the temple area was useful for a congregation of people and classes that the rabbis might hold. No one else dared join them, even though they were highly regarded by the people. Nevertheless, more and more men and women believed in the Lord and were added to their number. And you'll find several references to Solomon's Porch. And that's, we'll see it again in a minute. Now, this is the court of the women. And it's a major court in the temple area, as you see. And it's quite ornate. Now you'll notice, excuse me, there are people lining the banister up here at the top. You can get up on top of these roofs and look down onto the court. Women and men came into the court of women. And Gerard has decorated it with, very carefully with his tiling and everything. Steps leading up to the Nicanor gate, which only the priest could pass through to go into the immediate temple area. Now we'll look at some detail here. I don't know about these lamps. They seem to be electric lamps, but I don't think they were. But anyway, they gave light to the courtyard apparently at nighttime as well. And I suppose somebody must have described that. It isn't described in the Bible, but some of the contemporary writers must have said something about it. And so here you see people back in here. You get a view of the structure back in the cloisters here. Some of these rooms were specifically for the priests, particularly further up close to the main temple. And you see openings in the walls and so on where there must have been restrictions about who could pass where. And here we have, at the top of this row of steps, you can look through Nicanor Gate. Here is the altar for burnt offerings. And priests are back in this area in their white robes. And here is a hanging in the gateway into the temple itself. That's not the veil of the temple. The veil was further in, dividing the holy place from the most holy place, and that comes into play, you recall, at the time Jesus died, the veil in the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. You recall that. And so, but here's another aspect. We have over here a place where gifts for the temple treasury were deposited, one on this side, one on this side, and probably some priests sitting there to monitor what was going on. And as he looked up, Jesus saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. I tell you the truth, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave out their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. And so these depository spots here and here, sort of like a mailbox, I guess, in the way that they worked, I don't know. So you get an idea of what that looked like. And Jesus evidently in doing that was in the court of the women. Question. Well, the priest could go through the Nicanor gate to the area immediately around the temple. And that was very restricted. There was an area outside of that where the men could go. That's called the court of Israel. The court of the women, let's see, we have that labeled, where is it? Oh yeah, in your picture, the court of Israel is outside, and inside there is another courtyard that only the men could go, but the women and men could go into the court of women. Okay. Well, why was it called a porch?
No, why was it called Solomon's?
Well, I think they're just honoring Solomon in doing that. That colonnade ran all across the east side, and that, because the temple faced that way, the east side of the area was considered more prominent, and that's where the beautiful gate was, too. Now, here I want you to get a view of a main entrance into the temple area. You see, here's a main gate down here, steps going up to it, but it's below the level of the platform. And so as they went in here, or maybe down here, underground, they would come out up here. And here in these spots right here, what I pointed out earlier was something like a subway entrance. And so that's why it was done that way. And this south gate was the main place for people to come into the whole area. And they would pass through these various barriers to get to the main part. And here is Gulliver sitting in the middle of the Lilliputians. Now, this royal stoa, this colonnade here, is much taller than, say, Solomon's porch. And it's three stories tall, and it has openings on both sides. You see there are columns, several rows of columns through here. People can be on top of it, but it admits light to the interior. And one of my favorite pictures in this whole series is inside the royal stoa. So you can see daylight could come in at the very top level up here, and you see the three levels of it, and columns on both sides, and walls way back over here. I think this is the area going out toward the temple, and this is the area toward a wall, and people going back and forth in this major avenue. So this is the barn, a large barn that contains the model. And apparently if you go to England and to where he lives, and I think it says here where he's from, I've forgotten already, Norfolk, and that's a city. And inquire, you probably could go visit this. I don't know what it costs or anything about that. At the bottom of the page, you'll notice on this side, is the URL, that is the address on your computer where you can go look at these pictures. And I would advise you to do so. Now, there are a few pictures I didn't include in this story, but there's also a copy of the pictures I've shown you in our website, the church website, woodlandoaks.org. And so you can go there and download the pictures and look at them too. So this is a pretty good sized barn. You can see the entrance to it over here is is pretty much like a good English barn. And that area in here somewhere is where he has this model set up. And it looks like it's outside, but I think this part back here is a mural on the wall behind him here. But I think he did a marvelous job of putting all of this together. Over here you see the centurion and his troops are still standing there, or sitting there, or waiting for any sort of a riot to break out. Here we have people all around. This Soreg is the limit. You see, it goes all the way around, the limit through which only Jews can go. And that played a role. If you go over to Acts 21, you'll see a case where Paul is accused of having brought a Greek into the temple courts, and it starts a riot. And here come the troops. And so you can see how that fits into the story that we see in Acts. So the court of the men is in this area back here and over here, inside the Soreg, but not right here where the priests go, where the priests only go in the space around the temple itself. All right, do you have any questions, any more questions about this? I found it rather fascinating that someone would spend 33,000 hours in putting together a model. It's just mind-boggling. And I think he did a very, very good job of it. And the little models of 4,000 people make all the difference, don't they? In the, yes.
The troops, you know, like, yeah.
Well, there were temple guards, you're right. And maybe some of them could come into the inner areas and some others of them did not. I don't know.
But as far as, you know, the fortress, yeah. Herod built, he built that for, I guess,
for his army, yeah.
His army, not like the Roman army.
Yeah. Don't know. There are questions we don't know the answers to. And yes, Dan? Yeah. Okay. That's right. How they did this. It rivals the construction of a pyramid or something to bring in these huge, huge stones. Although we're talking about something 2,000 years ago instead of 4,500 years ago compared to the pyramids. But still, ancient man wasn't dumb. And he had skills and he had techniques that we still don't understand. And many of the stones involved in, particularly in the walls and all, were huge, huge stones. Anything else? Now, next week we're going to have the final class in this series, and we're going to talk about the temple in our hearts. Okay? Thank you very much. Appreciate your attention.
First thing that came to my mind was, as I flew over Baghdad, the Academy of Mosque looks just like this, except at night it's all lit up in green. But yeah. It's amazing how the Muslims, even today,